Hey folks, it's Brian Cook, your host here with a few words from this week's sponsor, Deceived by Kate Serene. Were the Knights Templar really wiped out at the end of the Middle Ages, or did they instead form a secret society that's been subtly influencing world events to this day? In Deceived, the first book in Kate Serene's new Dark Alliance series of fast-paced romantic suspense, that's exactly what happened. Sworn to protect and serve, the Dark Alliance is an elite undercover society of modern-day knights. With operatives around the world, these sexy heroes work outside the law to serve their unique brand of justice. Perfect for fans of Indiana Jones, Dan Brown, and heart-pumping action-adventure, Kate Serene is pleased to introduce you to the men of the Dark Alliance in Deceived. Available now everywhere books are sold and at KensingtonBooks.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 166 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include July 17th at the Virgil in Los Angeles, and August 25th and 26th, I'll be at the High Plains Comedy Festival in Denver, Colorado, doing stand-up as well as fanfic. Stay tuned for details on those shows. But today's show was recorded March 20th, 2016 at the Virgil in LA, and this is round two, featuring Matt McCarthy, Adam Newman, Joe Kilgallen, and Jordan Dahl reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. First you hear them draw topics, then we'll fast forward into the future to hear the finished pieces. Enjoy!
Judd Apatow sinks into the Corinthian leather couch in his home theater. Beer in hand, half a chub in pants. He's got the house to himself. The wife and the kids are away at some damn thing. For those of you not in the know in Hollywood, Judd Apatow is married to Leslie Mann, even though he's written at least three movies about what a bitch he thinks she is. But no matter, she's gone, he's alone, he's comfortable, and he's about to pop on his latest project, the Netflix original series Love. If you're not familiar, Love stars sex god Paul Rust. If you've never heard of Paul Rust, you're right. Paul plays Gus, a twee, nebbish nightmare of a character that somehow seems to embody the worst traits of both millennials and middle-aged lame dads at the same time. Playing opposite Paul is Gillian or Gillian Welsh, I don't care. As the equally unlikable character, Mickey, who is way too hot for Paul, which Judd likes a lot. They try to make her interest in Gus more believable by having her scowl a lot and go through a breakup with a beardless Kyle Kinane, who looks like Charlie Brown if he was a product of the foster care system. Author's note, Kyle is really funny in his two scenes, and he's a friend of the show, and he bought me and Dave Stone lunch at Langer's when he got cast in Love. There's a scene where Kyle's character bones Mickey from behind, and his fuck face is now ingrained in my memory like the vision of a burning Viet Cong child haunts a Nam veteran. But it got Apatow as hard as he'd been in days. Oh man, this is great, he said out loud as he massaged his dick through his dad jeans. But his boner didn't last long, as in a rare instance where nepotism actually comes back to bite a Hollywood producer in the ass, Judd's own daughter Maud then appeared on screen. Because Hollywood is hard for women unless they came out of Leslie Mann's vagina. Or let Judd come in Leslie Mann's vagina because they are Leslie Mann. Judd goes back to fully limp. The downside of cramming your whole family into every project you make is that it's hard to jack off to them later. The upside is you get to keep all the money. But never fear, it wasn't long before the scene where Gus, a character seemingly created exclusively for a segment of the population who wondered whatever happened to McLovin, somehow gets to second base with two topless college girls. It's their last day of school and they just haven't gotten around to having that three-way they meant to have. You know, because it's so hard for cute 19-year-old chicks who are sexually adventurous to get laid in college in Los Angeles. So they settle for a guy with all the charm and sex appeal of Ted Cruz doing slam poetry. They go back to Gus's apartment, even though the party they were all just at was populated with plenty of guys who aren't 40-year-old Jews who still look like unmolestable altar boys. Judd's back into it. His on-screen hero, Gus, is about to go all the way with these girls. Shirts are off, titties are out, Apatow likey. He's working his dick harder than his children will ever have to work. Nothing gets Judd Apatow hornier than seeing an utterly unfuckable man con a beautiful woman into tolerating his cum. Okay, this is one thing, but we'll get to that later. Judd's grinding away and he's just about to spurt his millionaire dork seed until one of the girls tells Gus that they're sisters because love answers the question, what if Before Sunrise was also American Pie for some reason? If that reference was lost on you, how about what if Woody Allen wrote a Seth Rogen movie? Is that better? Also, Woody Allen will probably at some point get around to casting Seth Rogen. It's Hollywood, and that's Hollywood's version of Birthright Israel. Every Jew just gets to be in a Woody Allen movie eventually. Anyway, Judd loses his boner again. God damn it, he is left unsatisfied by the pilot, but then continues to watch every other episode like everyone I've talked to about this piece of shit show. You know you don't have to follow through with it just because you started, right? Just like a sexually aggressive counselor at summer camp, it's okay to stop Netflix if you're not having fun. That was a molestation joke for the dumber people in the room. Judd puts in a Blu-ray of This Is 40 and successfully cranks it out to a scene where Paul Rudd is fucking his wife. He comes everywhere. Later, when the family gets home, he lets his daughter watch only the scenes that she's in because she's old enough to be cast in his projects, but young enough that Judd doesn't want to have to explain what actresses who aren't related to him have to do on camera to be in his movies. I will never work in this town again. Thank you very much. Please welcome your round two comics who will be writing based upon your suggestions. Jordan Dahl, Matt McCarthy, Adam Newman, and Joe Kilgallen, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Thank you, Jordan.
Jordan, let's start with you. Step up to that mic. Clap your hands for Jordan Dahl. Here's how this part works. If Jordan likes the first suggestion, he can take it and run with it. If he doesn't like it, I will draw a second one, and then you guys will have to vote on which one he gets to write. Jordan, your first option is Legend of Zelda.
Like it!
You look like Link.
Yeah?
You taking it?
Yes!
All right, Jordan Dahl, Legend of Zelda, let him hear it. Give it over, Joe Kilgallen. Jordan, I forgot to tell some of you that there's pads and pens on the end of the bar. Joe, your first option is The Never-Ending Story.
Let me hear the other one. Can I hear both?
You can hear both. Willy Wonka is your second option. So with your applause, who wants to hear The Never-Ending Story? Who wants to hear Willy Wonka?
That's surprising.
Feels like Willy Wonka. Joe Kilgallen, let him hear it. Keep it going for Adam Newman. You can do better than that for Adam Newman. Come on.
Even doing anything here.
Your first
that was
option.
Based on looks.
That's all it took, man.
Response can only be based
sexy
on.
Sexy ass sweater, you kidding me?
Yeah, he just told me I look like Freddy Krueger.
If?
I were Jewish. Freddy Juger. Is that my suggestion?
It is not. It's President Taft. Very close, very close.
But he's the fat one that got stuck in the tub, right?
The fat one.
I will take it.
All right. There you go. I don't know. And finally, Mr. Matt McCarthy. Clap for Matt.
Tournament of Champions winner.
Ah, former Tournament of Champions champion. Your first option is Mad Max Fury Road.
Give it to me.
Yes. Matt McCarthy, your round two competitors. Clap your hands. Matt McCarthy, ladies and gentlemen. Your first round two competitor. You can do better than that for Matt McCarthy. I like your backpack.
Thank you. It's from LL Bean. Once I'm sick of it, I can send it back and get a new one.
Thrifty New Englanders.
It's true. Okay. We fade in on a vast post-apocalyptic desert landscape. the kind of dry, wide-open space you'd expect to find between the legs of one of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. The camera swoops down and lands on a large silhouetted figure. The voiceover begins saying, "My name is Max. My world is semen and fuzzy bear costumes." Cut to black. The movie title smashes against the screen. Mad Max, Fury Road. We come back to Max. We see he's dressed all up like a big fuzzy koala bear, which are Australian. His big bare foot is pressed squarely and hard against the throat of a guy dressed like a two-headed lizard. On the top was like a lizard head, and below was a hole where his penis was hanging out. And you guessed it, it was painted green and had a little lizard face on the penis head. Get it? A two-headed lizard. Just like in the opening of Mad Max Fury Road. Except this was a guy who dressed like two-headed lizards with his penis out for kicks. Max stroked the dude's lizard and made a post-apocalyptic mess on his chest. Just then, a group of whore boys drove up in weird, fucked up Volkswagen Bugs with big weird antennas sticking out with like dicks on them and shit. The whore boys were all dressed like extras in a Duran Duran video and caked white with jizz. They clunked Max on the head and dragged him back to their big Citadel base where their boss, Immoral Joe, was waiting. Joe was dressed like a lion. A big, fuzzy, cute lion who likes doing it. They designated Max a cumbag, and they all jerked off on him. But not Immoral Joe. He went on the ledge, way, way high up, and way, way down below were a bunch of fucked up looking furries, a bunch of jerks, all dressed like tigers and wolves and otters and shit. Immoral Joe made a long, dumb speech. He then turned a big lever, and it opened up tubes that were pointed at the masses gathered below. All the furries down there, they held out dishes and bowls, and some of them that were really fucked up opened up their mouths and stuck out their tongues. Then the tubes Immoral Joe just turned on and started spraying out white foamy liquid. Ew! It was so much cum. Just all sorts of cum. Spraying out all over those furries. And they liked it. They liked it so much. All eating the load and swimming in it and shit and rubbing it on their heads and stuff. That's good eating. Suddenly, the whore rig, which was a big tanker truck full of cum, roared past Immoral Joe. He'd been had! All his sweet ladies had totally been stolen from his orgy room, and Charlize Theron was stealing them. Charlize said, "Call me Furiosa! I'm queen of the furries!" Her furry outfit looked like a cross between a dick and Woodsy the Owl. Furiosa said, "Give a hoot! Lick my foot!" Charlize was totally into having her feet sucked and licked and stuff. The group of Immoral Joe's sister wives totally licked Charlize's feet. And one of the girls said, "Charlize, take your top off." But Charlize Theron refused and said, "No, this is like literally the only movie where I don't take my boobs out. And you're just gonna have to deal with it." Everybody came at once. There was a bunch of old ladies there too, like hardcore lesbians since the 50s types. They came a bunch as well. Then the whore boys drove up with their stupid VW Bugs with long antennas. Then the lead one, Fox, he had Max strapped to the front of his car. Max had like a ball gag in his mouth and a bunch of tubes sticking out of his dick. It was all shooting jizz all over them. And then there was a big fight. And lots of people came. Lots of furries had so much load in their suits, and they all loved it. And then they decided to have a convention once a year where they would dress up in furry outfits and come on each other. The end.
Matt McCarthy.
Thanks, pal.
Thank you. What else we got, round two?
Jordan Dahl. That feels like a yes. That feels like the closest thing to a yes that we're gonna get right this second. Jordan Dahl, clap your hands for the very prepared and willing to come on stage, Jordan Dahl.
Oh, man.
They almost clapped all the way to the mic for you. Almost. Almost.
Almost. Hey! A smattering of applause left in the corner. I'm into it. You know what? I get caught up in the narrative, so there's I released some stuff online. If you get lost, you can go back and read the precursors. Okay, Legend of Zelda. The sun rose over the Lemmy Kilmister Memorial Convention Center. The concession stands have been stocked and restocked with hundreds of gallons of Mountain Dew Code Red Extra Thick. And even the non-handicapped bathroom stalls have been fitted with sturdy press-up bars, for today was the day of ZellCon, a biannual convention where Zelda fans from across the country could meet to swap stories and pink eye with one another. But this was no ordinary ZellCon. This year's guest of honor was none other than Shigeru Miyamoto, legendary video game entrepreneur and creator of games like Super Mario Brothers, Donkey Kong, and of course The Legend of Zelda. Moreover, it was rumored that he was going to use the opportunity to announce the newest installment of The Legend of Zelda game. It was going to be a big day for cosplayers. Early that morning, it could be certain that all across the city, pockmarked man-children had woken up extra early to begin the painstaking process of stuffing themselves into green spandex tunics, Funyun crumbs and all, in a yearly ritual that could best be described as looking a bit like trying to get Jimmy Dean sausage back into the sausage sleeve. They pulled on yellow wigs and plastic swords and one by one became the living embodiment of their favorite video game hero, Link from The Legend of Zelda. That is, if Link smelled like the inside of a Halloween mask after someone who had eaten too much shrimp threw up in it. The doors opened promptly at 9 p.m. and here they came, wave after wave of sickly looking androgynous elf men and women. Long ones, tall ones, short ones, fat ones, each unique in his or her particular brand of grotesqueness. It looked like if the Lord of the Rings had taken place in the shadow of the Fukushima disaster. They packed into the conference hall, wedged themselves into a crowd-shaped wad, and waited for Miyamoto-san to take the stage. The silence, if the sound of 5,000 people eagerly tonguing their braces could so be called silence, was all too tense. These nerds were here for more than just juicy game tidbits. They were strong here, and they knew it. They had come for blood. The lights in the auditorium went out, and it was upon them, a full-length gameplay trailer for The Legend of Zelda, Knights of the Speculum. It contained everything they could possibly want. Link, Zelda, an intricate combat system that literally required the player to place the Wii controller in their mouth and stimulate the buttons in new and exotic ways. Platforming segments, first-person RPG elements. The game satisfied every urge the pulsating mob could have hoped for, all except for one. It was impossible to pinpoint where it started, but somewhere in the back of the auditorium, a sound was heard. A sound like a beanbag filled with pork rinds splitting open. Someone had shed their Link costume. Soon it was happening all over. The Links, in their video fervor, had shed their homespun costumes and had begun to penetrate any and all orifice they could locate on one another. No crevice was safe. The lights in the auditorium came back up, and it was like something out of fucking Akira. The sea of flesh undulated like a bubbling casserole of cum, confusion, and discovery. It smelled like goddamn lobster fest in there. Just when it seemed the ocean of exploration would burst free of the convention city and spread across the city, the fleshscape was brought to a pause by a timid cough. Miyamoto-san had taken the stage in an attempt to calm down the convention goers. There was a moment where he stood before them on stage, his meager 98-pound frame spectacularly unprepared for what was about to happen to him. The wave of dicks and fingers and asses and pussies and itchy yellow wigs washed over him like the tsunamis of his homeland. They wore him like a goddamn power glove. And that's literally as far as I got. You can imagine what happened next, though. It's all online. Okay, thanks, guys.
Jordan Dahl. Ready? Keep it going for Adam Newman. You clap your hands all the way to that microphone. Look at him popping up right there.
That's what I like to see.
Limber. Very limber.
Unlike myself. All right, I've never done this before, so thanks for having me. I hope this is okay. I got a Taft. We all know one thing about Taft, right? All right, Taft. Well, if I'm going to be stuck in this tub, I might as well crank one out for the 27th President of the United States out loud in his bathroom. The only ears his words fell on were of his orange tabby cat, Chester, who bolted out of the steamy bathroom as if he knew what was about to happen. Or maybe he had seen it before. Ready to rub one out, William Howard Taft shimmied and shook until his wet balls unstuck from his inner thighs and that familiar pink pig's tail eventually popped through the grimy bubbles. Ah, the Taft shaft, Taft exclaimed excitedly. He quickly realized how little motion he had in his porcelain prison, and as he tried to sit up, realized just how badly he was stuck. He could feel it. His ass was so wide it had spread along the entire bottom of the tub, and the water had somehow created a vacuum seal, and there was no getting up. Something like that, he thought. I'm no scientist. I'm just the president. Then he said it again, out loud. I'm the president, and presidents can do anything, and I have the presidential cock. So he grabbed a handful of conditioner and started working it into his little commander-in-chief, making sure to circle the head of his penis first. He didn't know why he did this, he just knew that he always did. He made a mental note not to get any of the conditioner into his pee hole, because last time he did that, he peed razors for almost a week. And that sucked, so he focused mostly on the shaft. The Taft shaft. He said it over and over. Taft shaft. Taft shaft. Shaft of Taft. It was poetry to him. Chester came back in stealthily, and Taft turned to him and said, I will tell you when I'm ready for you. The cat looked at him as if he were actually about to say something in English, but just ended up turning around and walked right back out. But his tail was up and you could see his butthole, which is exactly what Taft needed at that exact moment. Taft was back to it, switching to his left hand, cupping one ball with his right, only being able to hold one at a time. See, Taft was such a huge man, and his balls were exceptionally huge, even proportionally for a huge man, that he could only hold one ball at a time. So he continued to switch from ball to ball with his right hand and stroked his straightened pigtail with his left until water and soap was splashing all over the bathroom. It didn't take long, 3-4 minutes max, and old Tafty was feeling that good feeling. He realized it had been a while since his last climax. Weeks? Could it have been weeks? Holy shit, he thought. I haven't come in weeks. I've been so busy being president. But here it was. It was time. His dick started pulsing in his pudgy hands. It was bright red. Both were. His hand and dick. And face, for that matter. The cum should have come by now. It was just holding. Taft was backed up. Taft was sweating. His cock was throbbing. Where is it? Why isn't it yet? Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. And then the explosion. It came out like the force of a 2-liter of Diet Coke meeting a string of Mentos, except this was white, like milk. Whole milk. No, heavy whipping cream. Taft screamed. He had never screamed while coming, but he liked it and planned on doing it again. Chester bolted back in again, just to immediately bolt back out. Not yet, Chester, yelled Taft. Taft realized he had been splashing so much that the tub had lost half the water, and he realized the vacuum seal on his ass had come loose. He slowly stood in a half-empty tub, covered in his own presidential sauce that, after having mixed with the water, had formed a tuna salad-like consistency and was drying quickly on his round belly. He quickly wrapped the towel around himself and went to the presidential kitchen where he was still alone. William Howard Taft grabbed two pieces of 9-grain bread and put one on the counter. He took the other and lapped the tuna-esque cum off his belly, then put it with the other to make a sandwich. Whatever cum was left over, he put in Chester's little kitty dish. Taft and Chester sat in the kitchen and ate every last bit of his tuna salad cum. Taft then turned to Chester and said, "Thanks for showing me your butthole. It saved my life." And that's the story of how Taft got out of the tub.
Wow.
Adam Newman.
Whew. Ah, I've been doing this just over 4 years. I didn't think anything would make me almost dry heave at this point. Ah, where's Joe Kilgallen? Joe. There he is. Clap your hands for Father Better and Joe Kilgallen.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you,
everyone. Give it up for everyone you've seen. Amazing. That's me killing time. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I've never seen Willy Wonka movie in my life. I'm dead serious. And the reason I wanted to hear another one, because it's a never-ending story, I've only seen the sequel.
There was a sequel?
There's a never-ending story, too, that I had seen. I didn't have cable until I was like 15. I was a poor young boy, okay? And I rolled the dice and got a movie I've never fucking seen. So there's Wikipedia, and this is gonna read like that. I had fun with it, I feel like. All right, here we go. It was the middle of the night when the sounds of the factory had woken Charlie from a deep slumber. Startled to hear the machines moving at such a late stretch of strange time, Charlie made his way down to the factory to investigate the noises. There he was shocked to find Violet wearing a strap-on, giving it to Grandpa Joe. Violet was given to it while singing the song Candyman. Charlie pinched himself to make sure he wasn't dreaming, though he had imagined this exact scenario many times before. But in Charlie's mind, Grandpa Joe was on his knees singing, "I Want It Now." That's the song that's in the movie.
Yeah.
Before Charlie could address the scene that was unfolding in front of him, the Oompa Loompas began circling Violet and Grandpa Joe. And while with incredible rhythm and timing, the Oompa Loompas began masturbating with such force. Their strong penises and wet vaginas sang with each stroke and caress. There's female Oompa Loompas, by the way. With each stroke and caress, a beautiful song played, coming out of their penises and vaginas. The Oompa Loompas began ejaculating and squirting in complete harmony. The colors of the rainbow just started shooting all over Veronica and Grandpa Joe. I then noticed I was fully erect, ready to jump in the action. All of a sudden, I heard Willie call my name. "Charlie, it's time," he shouted over the sounds of a dozen Loompas ejaculating in a chorus-like fashion. "The fuck is this, Wonka?" I screamed. "It's time for you to receive the true golden ticket." Good reaction, I suppose. Thanks. Willie then pointed towards a bed made of a giant chocolate bar, where Veruca Salt lied pleasuring herself with a 12-inch lollipop. Her vagina looked worn and tired. It looked much like gum underneath a schoolboy's desk. Wonka looked at me and said, "Take her, Chuck. Give that Brit your salty discharge." As I made my way towards her, Grandpa Joe, still aglow and covered in Loompa's love juice, looked me in the eyes and said, "Fuck her in the ass, boy. She loves anal. They all do. Do it in her chocolate river." Surprisingly inspired, I found myself five and a half inches deep in Veronica's Laffy Taffy. Feeling my cum rise deep from my gumballs, I was ready to pop. Then out of nowhere, Augustus Gloop appeared mumbling some bullshit in German. Sadly, my penis became more flaccid than an empty pixie stick. Killing the mood, I looked at fucking Augustus and said, "Talk about a gobstopper." That's the end.
Joe Kilgallen, Joe, stay right here. Let's get all the round two competitors back on the stage. Give it up for your round two competitors. A little less spry that time. Are we missing somebody? We're missing somebody. We're missing Jordan Dahl. Jordan, anytime you get a chance to get up here and do your goddamn job, we'll be here waiting. All right, again, I'll remind you of what everybody read, and then you'll be voting on a winner. It would have been really funny if Jordan walked out of the bathroom just then. We started with Matt McCarthy with Mad Max, then Jordan Dahl with Legend of Zelda, Adam Newman with President Taft, and Joe Kilgallen with Willy Wonka. Give it up for your favorite, starting with Matt McCarthy, Mad Max. Jordan Dahl, Legend of Zelda. Adam Newman, President Taft. And Joe Kilgallen, Willy Wonka. I believe that's Mr. Adam Newman with President Howard Taft. Matt hates losing. Give it up for your round two champion. All your round two comics. All the comics you saw tonight. Keep giving it up for all the comics. Yourselves. America, the staff here at the Virgil, me, yourselves again, Adam Newman one more time. Give it up for the fact that 3 out of 4 of them look like they could have been my cousins. That's been our show. Thank you guys so much. You're the best. Have a great night.
That does it for round two. To hear round one, you can go back and download episode 165. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. For more details, follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CEFanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.